AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Okay, these are on the list. The debt ceiling has been raised for now. It looks like USDA may be engaging in the hog processing line speed issue. The natural gas chaos that Davis and I have been talking about. Record high land prices. And another hearing on the cattle market ended with, surprise, no consensus.
Live from the thrilling culmination of the Agricultural News Week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Reefer Hub. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and your very own handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now your beloved host, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Woo. Appreciate that.
Yeah, baby.
The energy markets are off and running again, dude.
Absolutely they are.
Natural gas, not so much this morning, but crude oil is higher, sharply higher. And I think that's having an impact on our grain trade again today, man.
Well, as long as it pulls the grains higher, I guess we call it the cost of doing business. Maybe. Can we go back to that?
sure. Maybe. And this the natural gas story around the globe is just getting deeper and deeper, Davis. Mm-hmm. I think that's your first item in the news, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact,
let's go ahead and get to that first item and talk about it a little bit more.
You bet. Buyers in Europe, Asia, and Latin America are competing for limited natural gas supplies, racing to fill tanks with the fuel before cold weather hits the Northern Hemisphere, this according to the Wall Street Journal. Natural gas stocks are very low around the world, and prices in most places have never been higher after surging to new record highs in Europe and Asia this week. Demand has jumped as economies have bounced back from pandemic shutdowns, and the squeeze has caught traders, ship owners, and energy executives off guard.
Okay.
It feels like, okay, so this morning, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the U.S. November natural gas, just down slightly, 565.
Right.
We look out a little bit further, March at 545, but it humps up in the middle there. This feels like a short-term setback given this news. I mean, our prices are nowhere near what they're seeing in Europe, Asia, and now Latin America as well.
Europe and Asia are 4 to 5 times the price that we've got in the U.S. Yep. Josh Linville from StoneX, fertilizer guy, but watches the natty gas market very closely, of course.
Sure.
Last week told you on AgriTalk that the price of natural gas in Europe is equivalent to $175 a barrel crude oil.
Yes. Yes.
That is just like numbing to me, and what it might mean for, hey, Davis, it's October 8th, man.
Yes.
It's
yes.
going to get cold. Furnaces are going to come on real soon.
It absolutely is. And then you can't forget, you know, natural gas is the key feedstock, especially for European producers. We were talking about Yara with Josh Linville, talking about their cost structure. Basically, it's like $1,000 for them to even produce a ton of ammonia.
Yeah.
Just to produce the ammonia. Now you got to convert it to anhydrous ammonia. You got to, you know, load it. You got to ship it. You got to handle it. Shipping and handling not included in that. That's just the raw price off of the factory gate.
Right. Absolutely. And but this energy situation is going to be really, really scary. We're going to talk more about it as the show goes on.
I'm going long sweaters, scarves, and fingerless gloves for this winter. That's my investment strategy. The Senate passed a short-term extension of the debt limit on Thursday by a 50-48 party-line vote on a bill that raises the borrowing limit by $480 billion. That's the amount the Treasury Department says is needed to meet the country's cash needs until December 3. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer announced the House would return to Washington on Tuesday to take up the measure.
Yeah, we'll talk to Jim about that here coming up in a moment.
Well, China is currently building several huge gas-fired power plants and still plans to build 247 gigawatts of new coal power. I don't know what a gigawatt is, but that seems like an awful lot. Nearly six times Germany's entire coal capacity. They're adding Basically, another Germany.
That's what they're adding.
Yes. This according to the U.S. climate envoy John Kerry. Meanwhile, to encourage the use of renewable energy, the Chinese government has ordered electric utilities to charge customers up to five times as much when power is scarce and generated mainly by coal. I don't understand that part at all. I don't understand it.
Well, I mean, I get the tight supplies. If supplies are tight, yeah, then something ought to be worth more. But in China, that's the same as saying that the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't know if draconian electricity bills are going to fix their energy problems over there or not.
We'll have to see.
I wish them the best of luck. U.S. troops have been secretly training military forces in Taiwan, according to the Wall Street Journal. The deployment is a sign of concern within the Pentagon about Taiwan's tactical capabilities, considering Beijing's military buildup and recent threatening moves. China told America to cut military ties with Taiwan after the Wall Street Journal report. Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen said her country seeks to avoid war, but she added rather resolutely, "We will do whatever it takes to defend our freedom." A top Federal Reserve official said financial regulators should direct the nation's biggest banks to take new steps to manage climate-related risks as part of a broader effort to monitor potential hazards posed to the financial system. USDA Secretary Vilsack pressed on several livestock-related issues during a House Ag Committee hearing Thursday. We'll get to that with Jim. And restaurants are preparing for another COVID winter. Temperatures are dropping. Owners are upgrading and opting for elaborate decor and speeding up service, but their plans may be fustigated by supply chain shortages and whether they can find enough workers. Chip.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the jobs report that was out this morning too. Some chaos in the labor force. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. We're here. It's fall purse season. What are producers doing to manage the risk?
Well, you know, they're kind of probably trying to do quite a few different things. But I wanted to point out there is a recent study that was done with Pipestone Research, and where they looked at kind of some of the misnomers that people have. And people are saying, you know, do vaccines even work anymore on this strain of PRRS, you know, the 1.4.4.1c, or is biosecurity even helping? And so he did some research and said that definitely vaccines are protective against this strain, that biosecurity protocols are still what we need to be doing, and that the research backs all those things up. They did a bunch of different tests and so forth to prove that. But another research has been going on looking at the impact of zinc to help fight off PRRS. And obviously, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm hearing about zinc all the time just as a human because of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, you know, zinc has some protective properties that are going to help with some of those respiratory syndrome challenges. And so, you know, making sure that you get enough zinc and the right amount of zinc, I think, is what's key. We all know it's important in the diet for all pigs, but it looks like there could be some different benefits that could help with keeping PRRS away.
You know, I got to believe that you're doing it in a toolbox report on, you know, everything that you've got to have in your toolbox to fight PRRS, right, at Pork Business?
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of good information there if you want to check it out. Just about things that you can do to be helping, you know, reduce stress, keep that feed intake going, to help keep pigs at their best this season.
Excellent, Jennifer. Thanks. We got the free-for-all next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
Pulling acres ahead of the competition is simple. Senex Maxtron synthetic diesel engine oils give you the smartest oil for the toughest conditions. These premium oils are formulated with EnduroVis technology and a balanced additive package to control deposits for a cleaner, more efficient engine that gives you proven durability. Enjoy watching the others follow in your tire tracks. Senex Maxtron diesel engine oils. Oil that runs smart.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
All right. Just a warning. The guys are kind of wound up this morning, but we've got the free-for-all going. I'm going to welcome the first guest. You've already heard him today on the show, Davis Michelson, editor of Pro Farmers Landowner Newsletter.
Hello, doing, everybody. Buddy? Glad to
Everything
be here.
Everything good?
Everything is great, my great. Brother. Great. Great.
All right. Well, we've got some land news that we're going to get into here in just
You know,
at some point in the show. It's pretty impressive what's going on in some of these land markets. Another one from Pro Farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim, welcome.
Here and Adam.
All right, and good morning to Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio.
It's great to be here, Chip. It's also great to see baseball playoffs on TV. There's nothing like it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Arozarena.
It's close enough.
I love it. His last name is Arozarena. His first name is Randy.
He's Mr. October is what he is.
Oh, yeah. He's Mr. Playoff Baseball. There's no question about that. He stole home last night like it was nothing but a thing in postseason.
It was like he was 12 years old. It was like you see something in the Little League World Series. Unbelievable timing and speed. And, man, that dude is – he shows up in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy cool. Crazy fun to watch. Okay, another thing that has been crazy to watch, I won't say that it's been fun to watch, is the debate over this debt ceiling. But it sounds like we've at least got a temporary fix, Jim.
Ceasefire or a punt, if you will, since we're in football season, Chip.
Okay. How did it happen? What's it mean?
Well, it means that we're going to put a lot of things in early December, if not going into January, Chip. I hope I'm wrong there. And I know you asked me earlier about, today about whether the Democrats and Republicans were right saying the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, caved and was he outmaneuvered? Well, I'm on the other side of that one. McConnell has outmaneuvered Schumer, who's the, Democratic, majority leader, consistently. And this lifeline that McConnell gave the Democrats can easily be unknotted, if you get my metaphor. It puts us right back, Chip, into a year's-end package that some have said could go into January. And the Dem leadership is going to have no clear path to enact all of their agenda. They're going to have to pick and choose. And that's essentially the playbook that Nancy Pelosi and Schumer wrote when they were in the minority. Short-term extensions only breed more barriers, Chip.
Yeah. Jim, what do you think about his strategy of like agreeing to the deal and then going to whip the votes after the fact instead of doing it the other way around? What do you think of that?
Well, McConnell knew that even though he didn't have at least the 10, he eventually had 11 votes, he knew that he could convince his top leadership to go along. And really what he's doing is he wanted to take the argument away from the Democrats who said there's not enough time to do the debt limit right in reconciliation. Now they have the time. So they don't have an argument to fall back on anymore. This is why he'll eventually win that case.
Jim, what happens to this when it hits the House? Steny Hoyer said they're coming back to Washington Tuesday to begin considering it. The House doesn't seem like it's very unified right now on anything. Is this maybe something they can agree on or perhaps agree to disagree on?
Eventually they will agree, but it's going to be woe is me and all that other stuff. But when all is said and done, it'll be done next week. They want to vote Tuesday night, but I won't rule out a later in the week vote.
Okay. The vote counts on this, Jim. Raising the debt ceiling was a party line vote, right? 50-48?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was the 61-38?
Well, that was to invoke cloture, yes, where they needed at least 60. They got 61. McConnell voted for it as well.
So that's where they're saying that McConnell caved. But really what it did was I can see both sides on this, Jim.
Because you can see both sides.
Yeah,
yes.
Because McConnell all along has been saying, listen, if you want to raise the debt ceiling, you've got the ability to do it.
But right? Again, the Democrats kept saying there's not enough time to do it in reconciliation. So again, he is in essence taking that argument away from them. So that's okay. Why I'll come out on his side rather than Lindsey Graham, who says that it was a cave-in. That's why Lindsey Graham is not minority leader.
It's okay to compromise, like if cave or compromise.
That's right.
That's the I think needs to be noted. It avoids chaos. Like it's okay, mm-hmm. And it just I think like Jim says, it's a punt. It's not a loss. You're punting right. For the next set of downs.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's usually... like the White Sox losing game one. They'll eventually win. So it's that.
I love it. Let's talk about some news that was released this morning, and that is the non-farm payrolls. They were expected to increase 500,000, and we got 194,000, Jim. The unemployment rate was expected to fall to 5.1%, and despite the disappointing increase in the payrolls, it dropped all the way to 4.8%. Average hourly earnings up 0.6, and the key here, I think, is the participation rate of 61.1%. Hey. It's hard to find. I know that they're trying to spin it and say that unemployment's down to 4.8%, but it's hard to find good news in this report to me.
Yeah, and remember that Fed Chairman Powell noted after the conclusion of the September FOMC that he didn't necessarily have to see a robust jobs numbers report to change their strategy, relative to the accommodation in the marketplace, Jim. Mm-hmm. So I don't see much impact from this. I really don't.
Well, I'll put in perspective how poor the U.S. number is in the sense that, Chip, you said 194,000 jobs in September. Canada, which is really, 10% of the size, added 157,000 jobs. So it is rare that those two job numbers that come out always on the same day are that close in nominal value. That to me stood out right away.
Well, and I thought that ending the extended unemployment benefits was going to fix all this and that everybody was going to rush back to work and fill out their applications at Subway and everything was going to be fine. It doesn't seem like that's the case at all.
Jim, well, there's still way too many incentives to not go back to work in that are available, right?
Yeah, well, maybe AOC was right that the unemployment rate was so low during the Trump years because people had two jobs. Maybe they lost one of them.
Well, when you talk to restaurant owners, and I was at Buffalo Wild Wings yesterday across the street here from the hotel in Bismarck.
Oh, yeah.
And going to B-dubs. And you talk to the waiters and waitresses, they'll tell you, we can't find people. And the people that we do have are completely new to the industry. Yep, so wherever all these people went, it is still a bit of a mystery. And you have to jump right away to, as you mentioned, the COVID spending and the benefits.
Okay. I got to ask you this. Did they actually have wings at B-dubs?
They did. Yeah, they did.
Well, and I'm a little surprised, honestly.
Oh, and good ones. And
there's
good
another,
ones, Chip.
There's another wing. What is it? Wild Wings? Restaurant out there. They have had so much trouble getting wings to meet the demand at their restaurant that they added chicken thighs to their menu to make up for the shortfall of the wings.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I've noticed at my own grocer, there was a long time when, and I got used to this and I miss it already, it's gone. But it used to be this 5 for $5 deal. And they would take and package up, say, two sort of premium hamburger patties, right? And then maybe there'd be two pork chops in a package or two little sirloins in a package. A bundle. You could get five of these sort of grab bag meat products, and they're probably just about to expire. I don't know. That's why they put them on fire sale. But it was great. I had my freezer stuffed with these, and I haven't seen it for a month there yet.
Yeah. Well, and on the chicken side of things, remember, we've had some conversations on AgriTalk about the supply of chicken and some of the disruptions that they've had on the processing side. And basically Mark Jordan from Lead Analytics basically told us that he didn't want to come right out and say that there's a shortage of chicken, but he did go as far as to say, listen, demand for the top half of the bird, the breasts and the wings, is outpacing the supply that's in the marketplace right now. And when you go through, when you go by the meat case at the grocery store, at least my meat case, they either have chicken or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's one or the other, and it's concerning. These supply disruptions that we are seeing up and down, and it's not just the food supply chain. We've talked about the semiconductors. We've talked about a lot of things, and there's 70 some boats sitting off the west coast of Los Angeles.
Yep.
That are loaded with a 500,000 containers or something like that. It's an incredible number, and we can't get the truck drivers, the chassis drivers, to move the containers around once they get unloaded. If we can get anybody to unload them.
And Christmas
this is
coming.
Why the Fed's wrong. This is why the Fed's wrong in transitory inflation.
Gotcha.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, some strength in corn and soybeans at the end of the week.
Yeah, and I think, Chip, that we have to look at kind of the broader picture here this morning. The commodity sector, it's trading sharply to the upside. The dollar's under pressure. That is in reaction to the jobs report this morning, which was, again, disappointing. Yeah. And so those outside markets are giving us some support. And the one that's really running with it is the soy complex. So we've got soy oil futures moderately higher. We've got beans trading about a dime higher here at mid-morning. And that's leading the way so far in the grain and soy markets.
Yeah, wheat's a mixed bag right now. But that spring market, new contract highs again.
Yeah, so we've run up to new highs in the spring wheat futures. The winter wheat contracts have actually backed off this week. Some of that's spread-related trade that we've seen throughout the week in the wheat market.
All right, very good. Cattle market has had a pretty good week, but mixed trade today.
Yeah, a little bit firmer tone in most of the contracts. That's pretty good considering that jobs report that I mentioned, which is disappointing. So, we've already had some concerns on the domestic demand side of things. Export demands are absolutely phenomenal right now and record large, but there are some concerns on the domestic side. But cattle are mostly firmer here mid-morning. Hog market, it's kind of going into the weekend in a similar fashion. Mixed, but mostly firmer, but pretty light trade actually so far.
Yeah, we joke about how the Chinese negotiator, Liu He, liked that ribeye steak that he had while he was over here. Well, he took a bunch of them back with him. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
We could have played this earlier this week on 10-4 and didn't do it. And we had to wait until 10-8.
How did
we
miss it?
We had to wait till 10-8.
Blame the computer.
What is it?
10-8.
Blame the computer.
What is 10-8? Here we go. In
see,
service.
Going to the Google machine.
Available for assignment. That is me right now. I am 10-8.
That's so perfect.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson, part of the free-for-all today. Jim Wisner from Pro Farmer. Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Jim, there was another hearing at the House Ag Committee. And the topic was, once again, the cattle market, transparency, all the issues that have been documented very well over the last couple of years. Bottom line, it was.
No consensus, bottom line. But Vilsack did say USDA is in discussions on a line speed waiver with the pork processing facilities and workers, Chip, that have agreed to certain unspecified conditions. So that was revealing there. But he punted off some of his problems with the, you know, to the Department of Justice. So he's caught in the middle on that one. But basically, I spent a lot of time on this hearing on ProFarmer.com. But as far as the market transparency, they were all over the map, as you would expect.
Yep. Okay. Here's part of the issue that I think is happening in the cattle industry and among cattle producers right now. And that is that a no consensus result from a hearing like this is considered a win by one side and a loss to the other. A loss to the side that would like to see something like Senator Grassley's proposal of a 50-14. And I don't, again, it's like Sean said, it does it have to be a win or a loss? Can't it be a conclusion that, listen, we may not know enough right now? And there was the one comment about going back and building some kind of a pricing strategy that would reflect the markets of 2013, 14, 15. Well, if you do that, do we ignore what's going on right now with price? It didn't make a lot of sense to me on some of these, the conversation that took place, Jim. And that was after I had a great conversation with Dr. David Anderson from Texas A&M about the report, the book that was released earlier this week from TAMU.
Yeah, well, we need to have Senator Grassley read that book, Chip, because his bill, commonly referred to as the 50-14, you saw what the Texas A&M book said about that one. It would be very costly to the industry. So I think both Vilsack and Grassley need to read that book.
Well, now here's the deal, though. Dr. Anderson, I thought, had an interesting take on that as well when he said, listen, it doesn't mean that that's the wrong decision. It just means that there is a segment of the industry that believes the 50-14 or something similar to that is the right way to trade cattle. If it costs more to do it the right way, they're willing to do it.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. So, Chip, great interview with the gentleman from Texas A&M. I encourage everybody to go back and listen to that interview. I found it interesting, you know, the why people get aligned with a packer through grid formula pricing. And there is the lower transaction cost from an economic standpoint that he talked about. But, you know, some would argue that due to consolidation, people feel they have to align themselves with the packer and be involved in grid pricing so that they have somewhere to sell their cattle. So there's two ways to what gets people into that relationship. I know when there's trouble in the marketplace, you talk to feed yards that have that kind of relationship, they're thankful because they got a place to sell their cattle as opposed to somebody that's, you know, on every week on the open market taking bids from multiple packers. He referenced it very well. There is no easy solutions, and that's what frustrates people that want change here to just happen, right?
Yep. They want a silver bullet. They want the retail dollar to make its way further down the chain and get to the feed yard, get to the cow calf guy, get to the seed stock producer. Yeah, and unfortunately, there is no silver bullet. And I will say this again. We also had a conversation yesterday with Todd Herzog, Herzog Meat Company out of Butler, Missouri. They put up a processing plant down there doing custom processing, and they've got a branded product that's getting into retail locations. I think Todd said they're doing like 50 head a week right now. Now, if you had 10 of those and you do take 10 loads away from that region, then all of a sudden it does start to have an impact on the competition for those cattle that are out there. And the bottom line that I got from Anderson, from Dr. Anderson at TAMU yesterday, was the most logical way to help this industry is to increase slaughter capacity. But you know me, guys, I've talked about this more than once. Our cattle supply is going to be going down over the next couple of years. We're going to be building up capacity at a time when our cattle numbers are going down. That's a collision. You put a couple hundred million dollars into a processing plant and then you really can't buy the cattle. Wow.
Well, but maybe it could be argued that a time when cattle numbers are contracting might be the right time to do that, you know, because if we're talking cattle cycles, it'll come back. I don't know. I mean, you would probably have a better handle on the timeline than I would.
But it's not broilers and pigs. It takes years, not months.
Yeah, sure. And you better be super capitalized because you're going to long-term negative margins. We focused a lot on the positive margins of the packer for the past 2 years, but there's been cycles where that can be 2 years of losses.
Yeah.
And so you got to be capitalized.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about this for a long time, and I doubt if we'd reach a consensus that it'd make everybody happy.
I noticed they didn't invite us all to the hearing.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Come on.
Isn't it funny how the cattle market has a tendency to do that, even amongst us, you know, here?
Yep. Exactly. Okay.
We actually read reports.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And analysis. Yeah. I mean, it's important to do. Okay. Davis.
Yes.
Johnson County, Iowa, just for reference for everybody. Johnson County is Iowa City, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
They sold two chunks of ground. One of them was like a 75, 76 acre chunk, and it went for $26,000 an acre.
Yes. This reported by Hertz Real Estate Management. Down near Swisher, actually, if you're familiar with the area, just sort of south of the airport, kind of down by 380, came out with a CSR2 of 93.1. There was another plot there offered with it at CSR2 of 93.7. This is high-quality ground.
Yep.
And I've looked at the aerial photos. I've looked at the brochure on this. Man, this is a sweet-looking piece of ground. If you're like, okay, I would like to have the perfect chunk of farm ground, this is it. There's another one though, and okay, so yeah, it's you know, a huge eye popping number, as we say, at landowner. But there's another one who the guy bought the entire section. They cut the section up into four tracts.
Right.
And this one's out of Iowa as well. But he wound up paying $14,600 on one tract, $14,800 per acre on another tract, and then $14,000 on the other tract. Mm-hmm. And just taking the entire section. The land market is super hot right now.
Oh,
we were talking to Jim Minter.
So
the opinion is it continues.
Yeah, the opinion is that it continues. And it's not just prime Iowa ground. And, you know, one thing about that piece of ground down there by Swisher, the 26,000, it's right in that 380 corridor between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City.
Yep.
It's hard telling what is going. It might be growing apartments in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that at this point. But let's go to the other end. Dryland, Texas ground. Oh. Another year with double-digit percentage gains.
Yes. Yes. You've got the one up by, was it Dryland cropland up by 14-some percent? Dryland ranch land up by 17%. This is a super strong time for the land market right now, and especially for seeing ranch land too. With all the things that we've talked about with the cattle market and all of this, all the uncertainty there, and yet grazing ground still is on the increase.
Jim, does this fit with your inflation argument?
That it does, but I saw that Tyne Morgan quoted some real estate appraiser with Iowa Appraisal and Research as saying these record amount of land could flood the market in the next 60 days because you're going to drive more acres to auction.
Well, and that's been my concern this whole time on the whole run-up is, you know, Uncle Elmer over here, who's holding on to a half section, thinks, look at this, 26,000 an acre. I'm going to put mine on the market. This is the perfect time. And then you wind up stifling the rally.
Especially with all the uncertainty over the tax plan coming our way.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think if we get some certainty on that and it doesn't swing the farmer's way, I think that's exactly what you're going to see. Well, let's just get out.
I think a big question is how much land does Wiesmeyer really want to farm? That's the question. I have.
Well, and former President Trump is doing so well in Iowa. Maybe he's behind this land market. We don't know yet.
The poll numbers are going up already. No doubt he's going to make a trip. Okay. We have got to take a break, but when we come back, we've still got some ground to cover. WHIP Plus, Jim, we got to go to that because it may not be everything that it was meant to be for some producers. We'll cover that next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Davis is with us.
Yep.
Sean Haney from Real Agriculture and Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer. Okay, Jim, let's start with this one. The WHIP Plus program, it may have some glitch for some producers. What is it?
Yeah, WHIP Plus could be a minus, Chip. But this is the value as grassroots. With Pro Farmer, we have a lot of members, and one of them emailed me, and he said, you know, some producers who took revenue protection insurance may see little or no WHIP Plus payment under the new calculation. It's possible, he said, that producers who selected a yield protection policy, no price coverage, may come out ahead of those who actually bought better coverage. Now, when we wrote this item, you would not believe the emails I got from Capitol Hill, some very powerful people. And they told me USDA can address any glitch in rulemaking, but I'm telling farmers, I don't count on USDA to do anything, let alone fast, that, you know, get a legislative fix for this as well.
Yeah, that would make more sense to get the legislative fix on this because, I think you're right, Jim. I don't know if Secretary Vilsack would pursue, tweaking the rules to make an adjustment for this. I don't think
he's not bound by the prior WHIP Plus. So that's the good thing. They still have to write a rule for this. So that's why people are telling me USDA can indeed address it. So I understand that. But next week, I'll give the example that the farmer gave me. It really impacts the wheat and dry edible bean, you know, people because prices have run up so much, Chip. That's not a problem usually, but in this case it is. This is why any program like this has to have real examples to see if it works or doesn't work.
Right. Okay. The vaccines and their vaccine requirements for federal employees, including if you're on the FSA board, county boards, that it's still creating a lot of issues and concerns out there, Jim.
Yeah, and Vilsack was asked this yesterday during the livestock hearing. Of course, it opened up other areas, but he said the COVID-19 mandate won't cause FSA offices to close or mean farmers will find a reduced level of service. But, Vicki Hartzler from, Republican from Missouri, told Vilsack of her fears that the reluctance of some employees to be vaccinated is still there, and she worried about reduced services. But he kept on saying he doesn't anticipate at this point that they're going to see a major disruption in USDA services. But again, I'll bow to grassroots. There's a lot of concern out there, Chip.
Well, and that doesn't seem to imply that really there's necessarily a plan to ease those requirements or anything like that. It almost sounds like, wow, they're just going to get their vaccines and go back to work. That's the end of it.
Well, he did say there are exemptions for religious and health reasons. So that can open up some possibilities.
Health reasons. Well, hey, can't you say I'm young, healthy and the risk, my risk to COVID is exceptionally low. That's
well,
a health reason
heart
to not get one.
Yeah, heart blood conditions, clots. You might not get it. Yeah, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. He gives himself an out there when he says at this time. That
at this time. You're right. Keen on this one. Absolutely.
That's your out. That's your out.
Yeah. this is gonna be a bigger issue than what USDA may think right now.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Based on emails, it is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, this one is taken straight from a policy update report that I get every morning from a guy named Jim Wiesmeyer. Benefits for rich split Democrats in BBB reconciliation debate. The BBB is the Build Back Better. That's the Green New Deal. Under Democrats,
which another term is reconciliation. Yeah.
Reconciliation. Under Democrats' Build Back Better plan, a married couple earning a combined $500,000 a year could get $10,000 a month from the federal government when taking paid family leave to care for a sick relative or a newborn baby. The same program would provide a middle-class family with one wage earner much less, about $3,100 a month. How is this right?
One of many issues, Chip, that the Democrats are going to have to work through relative to their final package for whatever, the $2 trillion BBB program. And you've got groups coming out saying, don't touch climate change language. We need every dollar. You have the ag sector saying we need every penny for conservation. Don't reduce our spending relative to the BBB. So here we go.
Oh. So is that for maternity leave, Chip?
That's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. So I don't know the details specifically, but the U.S., if you compare the U.S. on maternity leave to Canada or other G7 countries, it is fundamentally different in the U.S. how much time there's mat leave or pat leave.
Yeah.
So that may just be coming closer to where everybody else is. Like in Canada, you get 12 months of pay for pat or mat leave, and you can combine those two for the total of 12 months, and you can extend that pay of 12 out to 18. Now, countries like Germany go, I think they do 2 years you get. So the U.S. is fundamentally different on the issue of maternity and paternity leave.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize
this is why we're more innovative and profitable than socialist Europe.
The participation rate in the employment in the job sector, Jim, is the participation rate is just going to be going down because of some of these benefits that are in the triple B.
Oh, absolutely. If this stuff goes through, you won't believe the negative economic impact you're going to see in financial markets, Jim. I'm sorry. I'm not. This is a unbiased view. If some of these things go through, you're going to see a negative reaction.
Yeah. At a time when some of the most productive people in the world, the baby boomers, are leaving the job force, we're not getting enough back in to replace them. And those that are coming back in to replace them are seeing some incentives to not join the workforce.
Yeah.
Crazy, 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 crazy. All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. Sean Haney, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers, everybody.
Jim, thank you, buddy.
Sure.
Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Davis as well. Come back this afternoon, 2:06 Central. Andy Schisler, S&W Trading, right here on AgriTalk.